Pearson and other organizations are using their own money to train people to become certified counselors to help people through the process. The state of Wisconsin and private insurance brokers are doing the same. J.P. Wieske is the spokesman for the Wisconsin Office of the Commissioner of Insurance, which oversees the industry. He says people living in regions without navigators can still get help when the marketplace opens on October 1st.
We think that we're hopeful that there'll be enough boots on the ground for people to get help, for people to understand what's going on.
Wieske says if the state only relied on federally trained navigators, there would not be enough resources to help everyone who needs it. Maureen McCollum, Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse.
It was southern Wisconsin's turn to get hit with severe weather yesterday. Major tree damage was reported from Hartford to about 3 miles southwest of there. 2.4 inches of rain fell near LaGrange in Walworth County. Madison officially got 1.9 inches of rain, which broke an 82-year-old rainfall record for the day. The National Weather Service says drivers on Madison's west side had floodwaters up to their headlights during late afternoon rush hour. High winds are reported throughout southern Wisconsin, peaking at 65 miles an hour near Monroe. Trees and power lines fell in Iowa County. A separate wave of storms around midday yesterday caused some damage near Siren in Burnett County. This is Wisconsin Public Radio News.
Supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio include Dental Health Associates, Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra, and Viterbo School of Nursing. Your business can join our ever-growing list of contributors. Become a corporate sponsor. More information at wpr.org/sponsor.
Support also comes from CTM, presenting theater for all ages, including A Christmas Carol, The Giver, and Anne of Green Gables at Overture Center for the Arts in Madison. Season tickets available at ctmtheater.org.
House Republicans say they will pass a stopgap spending bill, perhaps today, that defunds Obamacare. But President Obama says he will veto it should it pass the Senate, and the dispute could lead to a shutdown of the U.S. government. It doesn't look likely that such a measure would pass the U.S. Senate, but House Speaker John Boehner is telling his Senate colleagues they need to do their part and defund what he calls a train wreck of a health care law.
Well, guess what? We're having the fight over here. We're going to win the fight over here. It's time for them to pick up the mantle and get the job done.
This is just one of the stories that we will discuss in this edition of The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Other stories we will talk about. The House yesterday also approved a nearly $40 billion cut in the food stamp program. We'll also talk about what changes need to take place in the aftermath of another mass shooting, this one at the Navy Yard in Washington, D.C. on Monday. Also, a new poll is out that shows Governor Walker could defeat or would defeat potential Democratic rivals, but not by a whole lot. The poll respondents also don't think that protesters at the state capitol should have to get a permit. We will discuss the top state, national, and international news stories of the past week in the Week in Review, and we will welcome the stories and the issues that you want to talk about. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is now 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Friday, September the 20th. Let me welcome our guests. Peg Lautenschlager is a former Democratic Attorney General of Wisconsin, former state legislator, and a former United States attorney. She's now an attorney at the law firm of Bauer & Bach. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Always a pleasure.
It's always good to have you with us. Margaret Farrow is also with us, former Republican Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, a former state lawmaker, and she's a member of the UW System Board of Regents. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks to both of you for being here. Well, let's first talk about this stopgap spending bill that would defund Obamacare. If it doesn't pass the Senate and the president doesn't sign it, this is going to lead to a shutdown of the U.S. government, Margaret Farrow?
Well, we're going to have to see. It's always a pressure time. It seems we anyone who's been in a legislative body knows that you have to come up to a deadline to generally kind of really work through the issues and have negotiations with all people and get down to an answer. I'm not sure what's going to happen because we don't have good negotiations going on out there, clearly, and we're just going to have to see.
Yeah. Do you agree with John Boehner and colleagues that Obamacare should be defunded?
Well, I think we've got to change it, and I don't know if they get the attention and more or less put the brakes on by doing this and then getting people to sit down. You've already had so many delays that were enacted, I believe, totally without any constitutional right by the president, who, after he signed the bill and, you know, took his victory lap, then said, oh, wait a minute, I'm going to delay this, I'm going to delay that, which clearly could be pressed and challenged as to how he can do that. But there are over 19 of those delays and carve-outs now he's doing for certain industries or entities. There's something wrong with the bill itself, or now with the law, if there has to be so much adjustment on the way to the parade. And when we see it begin to march out gradually October 1st and then, you know, finally on January 1st when it's supposed to go into effect, it's still going to be a very imperfect instrument to do what we've already been doing in the state of Wisconsin, and that is ensuring the majority of people, far greater than other states had, and we're losing some of our value here because of this law.
Well, let me get Peg Lautenschlager in on first a reaction to the strategy of House Republicans to try to defund Obamacare.
Right. I think, first of all, as far as the strategy goes, it's clear, particularly with what seems to be happening this morning with Senators Lee and Cruz backing off on their threats, that the Republican Party did not really have a cohesive strategy. It seems as though some of the more practical and more moderate, not moderate necessarily in terms of their where they are on the conservative and liberal spectrum, but rather moderate in terms of recognizing that government is about people coming together and giving and taking. Those folks kind of gave into the Tea Party. You see that in the Republican House Caucus of Conservatives, which now boasts, I think, 175 members, which shows, I think, not that there are necessarily that many Tea Party-type conservatives in the Congress, but rather that there are so many people worried who are Republicans about a challenge from the right that they're all trying to highlight their conservative credentials. That being said, I think that this, you know, we're going to blow up the world strategy in terms of nothing gets through without a defunding, so-called, of Obamacare, is really kind of ridiculous, and it's ridiculous for a number of reasons. First, unlike the last government shutdown, in which, frankly, I was a federal employee and know how harmful that was, that one had a lot of spending bills already passed, so not all of the government was shut down. This shutdown would be the government, period, end of story. And as a result of that, the consequences of the shutdown would be far, far more real. Secondly, in terms of what's going to go into effect in the next couple of years involving Obamacare is stuff that's either already been funded or it's stuff that doesn't require a funding mechanism. So by, quote, defunding Obamacare, the Republicans in Congress really wouldn't be doing anything to stop the implementation, or would be doing very little, I guess, to stop the implementation of the bill. So I think that what you see is a lot of rhetoric that's being strewn about in order to energize a conservative base and try to convince Americans that Obamacare is going to be something that will in some way negatively impact their lives.
Well, at the same time, the House has an alternative plan to Obamacare that would incorporate tax breaks for individuals and families who buy their insurance through the exchanges. So they are saying let's defund it, but also let's have an alternative. So,
but the trick to that is that maybe helps somebody like me who has a pre-existing condition and has a fair amount of income and accordingly pays a fair amount of taxes. I think our biggest problem with this is that we have the working poor, who are people for whom tax deductions aren't going to mean a lot because their incomes are so marginalized already. And so those tax deductions, while they may help People who don't have work-type insurance or have to get their own insurance, they really aren't going to help the people who can least afford health care. And I think that's where the real problem comes in. And in a state like Wisconsin, you take then the cutbacks to Badger Care that are going to take place as a result of the governor not accepting the exchanges or setting up exchanges. And you're going to end up with an even bigger class of working poor who every day go to work not knowing if they're going to be, if they get injured wherever, they're not going to have the funds to pay for their health care and are on the brink of financial ruin, even though they're working at low-paying jobs day in and day out.
Yeah, Margaret Farrell, your reaction to the alternative House plan to Obamacare?
Well, I think what they're trying to do is respond to or make some improvement on the situation. We see this. You're absolutely right. Once it was passed, there are things now in existence with Obamacare that would be very hard, if not impossible, to untangle, to undo. So then you work within that framework to improve it. Congressman Paul Ryan last Friday at a speech here in this area said that very thing and said that we have to find much of what a pathway to do something to help the people who need insurance, and that's, I think, some of this. I don't know if it's all his idea that came out as this alternative, but it certainly seems to be walking in that direction. I think the sad thing about this is what I would repeat. We are a model in Wisconsin over the many years, bipartisan, both governors from both sides of the aisle, legislators controlled by both sides of the aisle. We have one of the best situations and one of the broadest coverages. And we're going to lose that. Peg just mentioned parts of it that we're going to lose. We're going to lose the high-risk pool, HRSP, which has covered people with pre-existing conditions that were uninsurable by the present standards of some of the coverage that was available out there. We're losing that. We have to dissolve the HRSP board, the HRSP subsidies, the HRSP program that many people are living with right now, and begin to subsidize in a way that isn't as well done as our program has been.
But the reality, Margaret, is there's one thing Governor Walker could do that would allow us not to lose any of that, and in fact, I experienced some gains, and that is to set up insurance exchanges here in Wisconsin. And just as an aside, I have one child who works without health insurance who lives in California. His insurance rates, I think, are going to drop between 33% and 50% as a result of his being able to purchase insurance on the exchange rather than what is now the so-called free market, but where you don't have full information about those various insurance policies. The reality is that in Wisconsin, we would not lose any of that funding. We would be able to continue with Badger Care if we would only set up exchanges where those who do not get health insurance through work or cannot afford health insurance through work would have the ability to shop for insurance.
Now, let me, Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan, who doesn't support Obamacare, says the law should be delayed given all the bumps in the road that have come up. Is he right at all, Peg, that there should be some delay in implementation?
I think that there may be some delay in implementation. I don't think that necessarily makes actions unconstitutional, as Margaret alluded to earlier. I think probably what's most important to remember is that we are looking at a change in the way we are doing something significant in the country, and whether it be Social Security, whether it be Medicare, whether it be Medicaid, whenever we have had these broad-based programs, there has always been a lot of fine-tuning that needs to be done. But the reality is you don't necessarily know what the fine-tuning is until you get into the program itself. You know, given the skepticism, particularly of Republican House members in this country to Obamacare, I would think that any kind of necessary fine-tuning or even some major adjustments that may need to be done in the law couldn't be done promptly with bipartisan support if indeed those adjustments need to be made. And, you know, my sense is the sooner we get this, the better. There are a lot of people out there with pre-existing health care issues. There are a lot of high-risk people. I'm among them. My husband's among them. There are a lot of people who don't have health insurance through their jobs, who even with the coverage through parents' insurance, if parents have it for a number of extra years, isn't going to afford them the opportunity to be working full-time and yet not have insurance. All of those kinds of people need to have their concerns addressed. And healthcare, I think, is one of those things where, you know, even if 75-80% of the people have generally good health care insurance or some kind of health care insurance, looking out for that other 20% right now has been so costly to us societally, emergency room costs, you know, not getting to treat diseases that need immediate attention, that kind of thing, that we really need to look at figuring out a way to do this. We've been looking at these issues since the early 1990s when Bill Clinton was elected president. In fact, we were looking at them even before then with George Bush, Ronald Reagan. And, you know, finally we got, you know, finally the shoes dropped and we've got something in place. And I think we ought to use that and move forward, making adjustments as necessary in the future.
Mm-hmm. Margaret Farrell?
Well, I guess, first of all, there's kind of an elephant in the room that nobody talks about in this entire debate, and that is the cost of health care. What we're trying to do is make sure people can afford it. And yet this bill and anything prior to it, and heaven knows if there's anything ahead of it, does it nothing about the health care costs, does nothing about the need for more efficiency and better spending on the provider side itself. And I think that is too bad. This was, I would remind you, the audience, that this is the first major social piece of legislation of this type that was passed with not one minority vote, not one Republican vote. This was put through, pushed through, rammed through because it had to be done then, and we were told that we wouldn't know what it is until it was passed. We couldn't understand it until it was passed. And Peggy just kind of added to that by saying, we won't know how it works out until it starts working. That's a frightening thing to lay on this population of this country and saying, well, let's throw it up against the wall and see what sticks. Let's see what we have to repair, what
well,
we have to adjust.
That's pretty much how all change goes, Margaret. And to pretend that Republicans in any way were not fighting against Social Security or Medicare or any of these kinds of things. We had these same kind of warnings with those. I mean, the reality, if I had my choice, I'd do single-payer things. I'd get rid of insurance companies, although that would make unemployment go way up in this country if we did away with that. I mean, but the reality is that given the parameters of what we can do politically, we have a program in place now that was at one point endorsed by the Heritage Foundation, that was proposed and implemented by Mitt Romney in Massachusetts, and now all of a sudden it's become what's going to be the bane of our existence if it goes into effect. I mean, I think the real concern here is that when it goes into effect, we're going to find that, yes, there are going to be some changes, and as I said, there are going to be some unexpected consequences, but we're going to be able to deal with those and straighten them out, and in the long run, we're going to have more people insured, we're going to have less expensive insurance rates, and the marketplace, as conservatives would like, are probably going to put a lid on some of the escalating health care costs as a result.
We need to move on to some other issues. Coming up, we will talk about the $40 billion cut in food stamps passed yesterday by the House of Representatives and other top national and state news during this edition of our Week in Review. If you'd like to join in, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Talking today with Peg Lautenschlager, former Democratic Attorney General of Wisconsin, a former state legislator, and Margaret Farrow, former Republican Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin and a former state lawmaker. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Weekends are fun and informative.
Are you ready to play?
I am.
I think part of the problem is the name. It's a boneless rib.
Exactly. What is that?
I mean, if you think about it, there is no such thing as a boneless rib.
I don't know what I'm saying half the time.
Do you ever think, like, what if this becomes his story? Like, what if people confuse fiction and fact?
Listen to the Ideas Network on the weekends. Check out the schedule at WPR.org.
Support for WPR comes from the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, helping healthcare professionals put their skills to work in the wake of a disaster through Weaver, Wisconsin's Emergency Assistant Volunteer Registry. More info available at weavrwi.org. WPR's Chapter a Day presents Return to Wake Robin, a memoir of one cabin and five generations in the Northwoods. Get the unabridged audiobook in the radio store. Call 1-800-747-7444.
Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up this afternoon between 3 and 6, it's Central Time. After 5, Rob Ferret and Veronica Rickert will learn how cutting-edge video game technology is being used to train U.S. soldiers. Also, a look at the day's news, and the guys from Wisconsin Foodie will stop by to talk seasonal comfort foods, now with the first day of fall just around the corner. That's Central Time today after 5 o'clock. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, along with Margaret Farrow and Peg Lautenschlager, and we are talking about the top issues in the news this week. Welcoming your input. Did something happen in the news this week that you would like us to talk about? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Well, the House narrowly passed a bill yesterday. The vote was 217 to 210 to cut food stamps by nearly $40 billion over the next decade. The Senate's version would cut only about $4.5 billion over that same time span. President Obama is threatening to veto the GOP bill. Let's start, Peg, with you. Are these $40 billion in cuts too extreme for your liking?
Oh, absolutely. And before you get into that, Joy, I think next you need to have Margaret and me on the fall comfort food program, because I think we'd be in the heat of agreement on all sorts of issues there.
Yeah, squash soup. How's that? Yeah.
That's great. But that being said, yes. I mean, when it comes to the SNAP program, the reality is that the vast majority of people who are on it are either children, the disabled, and the elderly. 76% of the households, about 83% of the total benefits go to people who fall into those categories. And the remaining groups of people that are in that category are the working poor. The top cap on receiving benefits is, I think, 130% of the poverty level. That being said, some years ago, states were allowed to put caps on receipt of food stamps on those who are the working poor, who are not in family situations, specifically adults without disabilities and who have not reached senior citizen status yet. Who have no children at home, who are single or married but able-bodied people. We've been able to put caps on receipt of food stamps of, I believe it's 3 months that at maximum of receipt during any three-year period. So what we have essentially done is designed a stopgap program for food stamps for unemployed adults who don't have kids, who don't have disabilities, who are under a certain age, and said, we'll give you food stamps for a little bit, but you really have to go out and find work. So I think that we have these kinds of things in place. But, we're dealing with an economy where jobs are tough to find, and a lot of the jobs that exist are fairly low income, where people are making $20,000 a year or less working full time. And so I think the food stamps have provided an important benefit that way when it comes to our nation dealing with hunger. The second thing about it, too, is that these food stamps are going back into the economy, and which is why historically they've been tied to the agriculture bill, because food stamps are allowing this portion of the population to continue buying groceries, to continue getting flour or beans or corn or whatever. And those kinds of expenditures in the food market certainly bolster our ability to provide living incomes as a society to those who farm.
So do you think this $40 billion cut is justified, Margaret Farrell?
Well, I think it is, because I think Peg described the ideal. I mean, when you look at a program like this and you say, this is what we're trying to do and this is what it would look like, Peg just described that. In reality, what is really happening in the work in the streets of every major city or the parts of our country where the food stamp use and population is
to the great extent. It's a lot of the other. It's a lot of what is it being used for? Is it being used for food, especially for children? This is going to curtail how many, what Peg just described, how many work people who are capable of working who are not. And a lot of it does rest on the economy, which is very, very slow returning from the recession. They never have we had a recession begin to turn around and head upward as this one has taken. You know, the Fed's just said, no, it's still not growing fast enough and are going to continue to do what they're doing to put money into a stimulus, as we've seen just this week. So you look at who could be working out there and for some reason isn't. I know that there are jobs available in our state, certainly in our southeastern corner of the state. They're everywhere you're going now. You're seeing signs of people, help wanted. And people find it easier and more satisfying to them, to their economic needs, maybe not to their own self-esteem, but to their economic needs, to stay on the programs that we have made available, both in our state more generously than on the federal level, but also on the federal level. And they're saying, I put my package of what I can get from the state together, and it's more than I can get if I went to work. We've lost that work ethic, that's pride in doing something. And I think this is trying to at least say, those of you who can be working, there is work available. Granted, I agree with Peg. We would love to have everyone walk into a really good-paying job, but these people also, for one reason or another, have not completed their education, perhaps, have not worked to develop a skill that we have opportunities of that in this state. And so I think what this is trying to do is saying, how much can those who are working continue to carry and help those who aren't working, who could work? And that's what it comes back to all the time. The more you have those paying through their taxes who are out there every day, the more we've seen the burgeoning population who say, okay, I'll sit home and you know, take use of this benefit, certainly hopefully doing something with their lives, taking care of their children or what have you. But I think this is a step toward what we did many years ago, as Peg knows, in this state when we changed from what Governor Thompson at that time called W-2, work, not welfare, work so that you can get yourself out of the need to be in welfare situation.
I'm Joy Cardine with Margaret Farrow and Peg Lautenschlager. This is The Week in Review, where we talk about the top state, national, and international news stories of each week. We need to talk about some other issues. President Obama is going to be in Kansas City today to make the case that the economy is poised to take off, assuming, he says, Congress doesn't screw it up. Not only is there a talk of a government shutdown over defunding Obamacare, but there's also the looming debt ceiling that we're expected to hit in mid-October. On Monday, the president said that he is sticking to his guns and won't allow Republicans to hold the economy hostage in order to score political points. He made these comments on the anniversary of the financial crisis.
I will not negotiate over whether or not America keeps its word and meets its obligations. I will not negotiate over the full faith and credit of the United States. This country has worked too hard for too long to dig out of a crisis just to see their elected representatives here in Washington purposely cause another crisis.
Well, let's start with you, Margaret Farrow. First off, do you think the economy is in a position to take off? Have we recovered sufficiently since that crisis 5 years ago?
No, I guess I'd want to define take off. We have seen a very, very gradual turnaround and beginning to have the bar graph start moving upward very gradually. So it isn't taking off. It's beginning to move slowly in the right direction. And I think one of the concerns is what we spent the first, 10, 15 minutes of this program on, and that's Obamacare. Your small businesses in this country, where the growth always is, and it isn't happening now, is because those companies are saying, as Peg said, until this starts taking effect, we won't know the effect of it on the economy, on the individual finances of these small companies. And they're not going to hire, so we're not seeing that
the very legitimate churning around and beginning to bubble up in growth that we should be seeing. This is a very different statement from an Obama as he was senator in 2006 when he was on the other side of this argument and said we should not keep raising our debt limit as, when he was in the Senate. Now we're hearing a very different story. I think this is a point where it's very sad that we're, and he is showing a willingness to negotiate, perhaps when some of us think he shouldn't be, with people like Putin, but yet he won't negotiate these issues with our own legislature, duly elected as he was, who are trying to find answers to these issues and get this country moving again.
Peg?
I can't disagree with Margaret more. First of all, Margaret, you cited the Bernanke report and what the Fed did, saying that the economy was still growing moderately at best. But the reasons that they expressed concern were the very reasons which you are ignoring. Number one is they noted that there are rising mortgage rates, so the banks are making more and more money off of mortgages. Number two, they have said that cuts in government spending are restraining growth, and yet the Republicans are advocating for that. And number three, they are concerned about the incredible income disparity, which is greater in this country than at any time since before the Great Recession. The reality is there is an imbalance here that is stopping us from having growth, and rather than putting money into certain government spending programs like infrastructure and other things, which always were bipartisan, we are instead giving tax breaks to those so-called job creators. And those tax breaks, frankly, are being financed by people like me. I see this right here in Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, where Mercury Marine threatened to move its operations to Oklahoma. And then what they did was they said, geez, union guys, we're going to have to renegotiate this contract because you make too much money. So now we have a bifurcated structure where these people who ostensibly didn't finish college and don't have any kind of training in some sort of trade, as was described by Margaret, are taking $10 an hour jobs, no benefits, with Merck Marine, while I, as a taxpayer, am paying a 0.5% in additional sales tax to keep them here, give them a tax deduction. Their executives are making more money than ever before, as well as the hedge fund folks who are part of the group that bought them out. And these workers are kids who oftentimes do have high school diplomas, who oftentimes have some college background, and they're making $10 an hour, at $20,000 a year, no benefits, no sick days, no vacation days, no health insurance, nothing. And I, as a taxpayer, am having to subsidize that. Those kids are working hard. They are not working. They are working below what they are qualified to do, and what they are doing deserves more than $10 an hour. And until we address those kinds of issues, the things which the Fed has discussed that are slowing down our economy, income disparity, government cuts in terms of spending for things that would allow growth, and mortgage rates, until we deal with those kinds of issues, we're not going to have a full recovery. And I think it's time for our elected officials to wake up and understand that need.
There also on Monday, there was another mass shooting. The Navy Yard in Washington, D.C. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel says that there were a lot of red flags that may have been missed in the background of Aaron Alexis, who killed 12 people Monday at the Washington Navy Yard. He says investigators are looking at why they didn't get picked up on in the process of giving Alexis security clearance. So that's being reviewed, and some in Congress, such as Senator Dianne Feinstein, is saying that it's time for Congress to do something about stricter gun control laws, that it's the responsibility of Congress to follow up on mass shootings like this. Peg Lautenschlager, your thoughts on what we need to do following that shooting?
Well, I think there are two things. First of all is the issue of security at government-run facilities. And one of the concerns I think a lot of people have had is that while we have been very good about doing background investigations on people who are going into federal employment, kids entering the military, whatever, and we have really well strengthened those requirements, And have a lot of follow-through on those. Where the downside is that with the increase in privatization of many of the jobs that were ordinarily done by government employees, the federal government has had a difficult time finding enough people who are qualified to do the background investigation of those private company employees. And as a result, those background investigations have been streamlined considerably. A lot of people who are doing those backgrounds are retired federal agents, a lot of times retired local and state law enforcement officials. They try very hard to get these things done, but there has always been a backlog, and oftentimes things have to be expedited because of the parameters that come with somebody needing to get on a base and do whatever project it is. So I think we really have to have a realistic look of in terms of that situation generally. As to the weapons ban, I applaud Senator Feinstein, excuse me, and I think we do need to at some point have a rational conversation about guns. You know, we have these instances where people say, well, I have a right to carry this openly, and you certainly do, but geez, I have a right to walk down my street with my grandson and not feel like the guy across the street who's legally carrying a gun, you know, might shoot at me. And how do I know whether or not this is the upstanding person who's just practicing walking around with a rifle for hunting versus somebody who's perhaps had some mental health issues? At some point, we need to divorce ourselves from this notion that the Second Amendment means that despite pretty much anything, you can carry a gun whenever and wherever you want, no matter who you are.
Margaret Farrell?
Well, I guess I'm trying to figure out just where to approach what Peg said in get to the what I feel is more clear understanding. First of all, we have had too many tragedies of this type, whether it was in Colorado or on the Texas military base or now this one, of mass shootings. This one was totally and erroneously characterized by the media immediately as having an automatic military, paramilitary type gun being used, which was wrong. It wasn't an AK-15. It wasn't anything automatic. It was a pump shotgun, which I'm not condoning in any way. Don't misunderstand me. But this was not the gun doing it. This was a very sick person. Peg can say what she does about privatization, but the doctor in Texas who killed all of those service people, that individual was a very definite government employee, not something privatized where the employer now can be held responsible and be asked and scrutinized as to how they're screening their employees that they're bringing onto these bases. So you have two ways of controlling that, both by the federal requirements and the federal requirements as being carried out by a contract employer. I think we're talking about mental health here more than guns. We have already had examples here in the Milwaukee area where someone carrying a concealed weapon has forestalled a burglary or helped a shop owner who was about to be attacked by an individual on an armed robbery, and he was able to fend that off. So there are places where that comes out and helps people on the other side, on the positive side. I think what we need to do to answer these things is not scream more about guns, which are very cold and lifeless without someone's hand picking them up and acting with them. We have to do more about the mental health screening that we do and the aid we give those people who need it.
Republican Senator John McCain is accusing Russian President Vladimir Putin of corruption, repression, and self-serving rule in an opinion piece for Russia's best-known newspaper. McCain's column for Pravda answers the Russian leader's broadside last week in the New York Times. Margaret Farrow, bravo for John McCain or not for that?
Well, I mean, why not? We were being told and talked to by Putin, who's talking to the people in his manner of expressing his opinion about what we're doing. The man is a very unique individual. The recent photos that we have seen of him riding a horse bare-chested, and we know he's a physical fitness person and all these sorts of self-focused things.
the man is a very interesting individual. I think Senator McCain has had every right, and certainly, apparently, the people at Pravda thought he had something to say, and they put, they printed his, I assume they printed his letter. I know he submitted it to them, and his opinion piece, and I think he's right on target.
Peg?
Let me just say a few things. One, I agree with Margaret. I mean, I don't know. Men that age shouldn't be riding around bare-shirted, and we can agree on that, or bare-chested. I think we can both agree on that. But it is kind of an, you know, if it didn't deal with such incredibly important issues like Mideast peace, it would almost be comical, I think, to watch the exchange. But it is what it is, and I think, you know, John McCain is going to say what he thinks, even on foreign policy things, where usually we try to keep some partisanship out of it, and Vladimir Putin obviously is going to do the same. And I just want one quick thing on the background checks, and that is, Margaret, that the fellow in Fort Hood did not have the kinds of red flags attached to his name as did the fellow who did the shooting in the Navy Yard this last week. And I think that those red flags, had he been subject to a federal background check, would have come up.
We need to move on. It's time for our Week in Review quiz coming up, and then lots of state news that we'll talk about, including a poll that gauged public opinion on the 2014 gubernatorial race and the protesters at the state capitol, the singing protesters at the state capitol. We'll talk about that coming up. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include the D.B. Reinhardt Institute for Ethics and Leadership, located at Viterbo University, bringing people together in fruitful conversation about ethical ideas and issues and committed to advancing the common good. Support also comes from Von Briesen & Roper, a Wisconsin-based law firm with more than 100 attorneys dedicated to providing unparalleled service in meeting the needs of local, national, and international clients. Information at vonbriesen.com.
Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up after 9 o'clock, it's 45 North. We live increasingly in an image-driven world. 45 North will explore the emergence of online photo culture and the opportunities it creates for global creative collaboration. That's coming up on 45 North in our next hour. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Margaret Farrow and Peg Lautenschlager today, and with you. It's now time for The Week in Review quiz. Techno geeks are excited this morning. Today is the first day they can buy the new iPhone 5. Not only is it available in new colors, has a better camera and more advanced processor, but it's equipped with a brand new feature that everyone is talking about. What is it? What is this much-talked-about brand-new feature of the iPhone 5? 1-800-642-1234. That's the number to call if you'd like to play along. 1-800-642-1234, or email your answer to talk@WPR.org. We'll randomly select a winner from all of the correct answers. We will announce the answer and the winner at the end of the show today, and the winner will be entitled to one of the books that we featured on the program recently. You're listening to The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Peg Lautenschlager, former Democratic Attorney General of Wisconsin. She's a former Democratic state lawmaker and former United States attorney, currently an attorney with the law firm of Bauer and Bach. And Margaret Farrow is also with us, a former Republican Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, former Republican state lawmaker, and a member of the UW System Board of Regents. Well, let's talk about this new poll that was out this week. A new poll shows Wisconsin residents are pretty split on Governor Walker's job performance. 48% approve, 49% disapprove. This is from a Democratic firm, Public Policy Polling. It also shows Walker leading four potential Democratic opponents, including former Truck Bicycle Executive Mary Burke, 48% to 42%. Peg Lautenschlager, how do you view the Democrats' chances of dethroning Governor Walker?
Well, I think right now it's difficult to tell whether or not there will be a, quote, dethroning of Governor Walker. I mean, obviously the polling results show that there is a good portion of folks who are not happy with his job performance and don't like the direction in which he's taking the state. The real question, I think, for Democrats is going to be, can they find a candidate around whom Democrats and some independents can coalesce? And there are a number of people whose strengths were polled in that PPP poll, and I think it shows that, you know, despite relatively low name recognition, they can still hold their own against the governor. And I think for Democrats, what's most encouraging about that is given the low name recognition of many of the people or several of the people polled, they are still getting a strong core of 40% probably of the voters who are probably in that category of anybody but Walker. So the real test for Democrats is going to be, can you pull that extra, whatever that percent is, probably somewhere between 5 and 12% of the voters who are either undecided or lean Walker in these polls. But I think any time an incumbent governor is under 50%, on a poll such as this, it is good news for his or her opponents.
And what's your take on the poll, Margaret Farrell?
Well, I guess, first of all, thanks for mentioning it's a Dem poll, because there are polls that slant both ways, and this one is one that slants and traditionally has been seen as a Democratic poll. We also have to remind ourselves it's 14 months out. So much happens on the way to an election in these next 14 months, and both directions, good news, bad news for the incumbent and the challengers. And I think for the governor to have been elected twice already in this term, and that means surviving a recall, the first ever in the state's history of a governor, and in the country as of a governor winning a recall, he already is beginning to continue to show in terms of what he can control, the tax situations, the various things that a state on its own can control, he is showing improved numbers all the way in. Again, this December tax bills for for property owners will continue to be looked upon in a positive light, I'm sure, because of what has been done. We're still our employment levels are still reflecting the slow recovery from the recession on the national level, and that is something he has to work on. There's no question about it. What do I think of the actual numbers? I think that he's doing well. I think 48% is certainly not as good as 50% in terms of people's attitude, but again, I remind everyone it was a Democratic leaning poll, and that could have been the difference in those. I don't know what the margin of error was in this poll. There always is a margin of error. I think his performance is more and more gradually showing people this is the way we should be going as a state. I would also remind you, in his first election, Jim Doyle did not win by a majority but a plurality in the 40s, rather than having received half the votes, at least half the votes. So we're a definite, you know, we're a purple state, no question about it, and it will be a very interesting 14 months.
The margin of error, by the way, is 2.9 percentage points. The poll also showed that people don't think that the Solidarity Singers should have to get a permit to gather at the state capitol. 41% said they should get a permit. 45% said they should not have to get a permit. Your thoughts, Margaret Farrell, on whether this crackdown by Capitol Police on singing without a permit is worth it?
Well, I thought the reaction of the general public, many of whom probably have never been to the Capitol, or if they have, it hasn't been in the last 2 to 3 years, was interesting. If anyone has, some years back, and I don't know, Peg, if you were there then when we began renovating the Capitol, and the entire Capitol was renovated and somewhat remodeled in that all of the legislative offices are there in the Capitol. Some of the support agencies are now right across the street or down the block from the Capitol. But the group that work in the Capitol day in and day out are the representatives of the people and their staff. It is virtually impossible to work over the lunch hour in most offices with the noise that goes on. I think it's very limiting for people to walk into the Capitol and avoid the rotunda, which is generally the place people want to come in and walk through the rotunda and look up at that beautiful dome from the inside. They can't do that at this time. I think it is an affront to our openness as a building. I think it is totally over the top, and I think they should have to, I mean, I can remember when I was there in UPEG, if school groups wanted to come and wanted to do something other than just take a tour, they had to get a permit to gather if all sorts of things were duly noted and followed, and we just kind of threw that book out the window 2.5 years ago. I have no problem. There's no cost to this as I understand it. It's time, yes. It's planning, yes. And I think they should have to let the world know and perhaps have a little common sense and reason play into this. I mean, this is just a lot of people who want to do this on their lunch hour if they're employed or because this is the biggest thing they do during the day if they're retired. I don't know who it is, quite frankly, that's doing it.
Peg?
Well, having been in the Capitol several times in the last couple months, I think there are a couple of things that should be known. Number one is generally the group that's singing there has between somewhere between 15 and 25 people singing. It wasn't until the rest again came about that those numbers swelled. Secondly, if somebody does have a permit to be in the Capitol, including a group from, I believe it's Jefferson County, of Republicans who like singing, when they come and they have a permit to be in the dome, the Solidarity singers go outside and sing. They have never caused problems with anybody who's permitted. Thirdly, walking through there and listening to somebody sing the Battle Hymn of the Republic or Joe Hill or whatever it happens to be, I don't think is in any way disturbing anyone's lunch hours. Now, when some high school bands used to come in and play patriotic songs of their liking that were very, very loud with a lot of players, it sometimes, if you were in an office where the sound carried, could be a bit distracting, but I think most of us have had music playing in the background on occasion when we've done our work. So I don't see this as being a big deal. I think the overreaction is causing the numbers of the singers to grow, and the amount of time that's been spent on this as opposed to, say, creating jobs where, even Margaret admits the governor has fallen short. The amount of time that's spent on this and the number of amount of resources, amount of assistant attorney general time that's being spent on this since the local police and sheriff's departments don't want to participate in any of this, so it all falls on the Capitol Police and the state AG's office to do the prosecuting. I mean, I think our resources could have been better placed elsewhere.
We will talk about more state issues on our state capitol report on Monday between 7 and 8. We'll be talking with Democratic State Representative Corey Mason for the first half of the state capitol report and about state issues, and we'll also talk with a Capital Times political reporter to talk more about that poll. That's on our state capitol report on Monday from 7 until 8. Well, congratulations to Tim in Middleton. He is the winner of today's Week in Review quiz. What is the hot new feature on the new iPhone 5, which goes on sale today? It's a fingerprint sensor. Now you'll be able to use your fingerprint, or Touch ID, as Apple is calling it, to unlock your phone instead of using some sort of passcode, although you can still do it that way if you want to. You can register up to 5 fingerprints with the new iPhone 5. That's a little bit space age for me. Anyway, we'll leave it there. Margaret, Peg, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Peg Lautenschlager, former Democratic Attorney General of Wisconsin, and Margaret Farrow, former Republican Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Politics, pop culture, arts, science, and more. You'll hear it all on Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Every weekday afternoon from 3 to 6, we'll have compelling conversations about what matters now.
We'll talk about the latest news of the day, explore exciting concepts and trends, and have some fun along the way.
And we'll connect you with people, ideas, and events in Wisconsin and beyond.
Join us on Central Time, weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for WPR comes from WEA Trust's health plan for state and public workers, available in 62 counties, including Dane, for 2014. You work hard for Wisconsin, and we do too. Details at weatruststatehealthplan.com.